Tango Tango Papa 2086, December 14th, 2021.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Carnesville, Georgia. So, I'm experimenting with video again. if this all goes right, whenever I upload it to YouTube, I'm going to have two different angles. So I've got the angle that's going to be coming from the camera that's in the computer that I'm actually using to record the podcast with, and that one is on my to my left, and then on the right over here I'm pointing at it is another machine that has its own camera. So I don't know, lately I've been kind of enticed by the video bug a little bit, because it's been a really a long time since I really messed with it much. And I think, as I said before, I think probably what kind of caused me to lose interest in video was the fact that it was just so difficult to upload. But that seems to have gotten a little bit better at this point. So, and that is certainly true when I'm at home. No question about that. So, in any case, I had three things. Basically, I have three things that I want to talk about. If I can get this to... There we go. Got my notes right here that I'll hold them up to the camera. Got them here on my Note 20 Ultra. So, I got three different things I want to talk about. And... let's see, so which one should I start with? Well, let's start with the labor shortage. Because the labor shortage, this labor shortage, seems to be on the lips of virtually everybody that I come into contact with. It's everywhere, especially now. I'm seeing it mostly, you know, I'm in and out of truck stops, and that's mostly where I see people talking about it, but especially in the restaurants, because there's this thing now where if you go in, like I go into a Denny's or a it could be an IHOP would be another one, where they, you know, normally Denny's and IHOP both will put up a sign and they'll tell, you know, basically wait and then we'll seat you. Now, they're like right now here at Carnesville, Georgia, there's a Petro truck stop and it's got an Iron Skillet restaurant in it that's open. Some of them don't, but this one does, because they've closed some of the restaurants, but for, you know, various reasons that I've talked about in the past, but, and probably because of the labor shortage as well, but, and TA kind of wanted to get out of the restaurant business to a large extent, I think. They own Petro as well. So, but anyway, this Iron Skillet, you just walk in and sit down. And if they don't want you sitting in an area, they just, you know, kind of block an area off. Because they've got, these are larger restaurants with quite a bit of seating. So, but, you know, in that case, you just walk in and sit down wherever you want to, as long as that part of it's open. And you make sure, hopefully, that the waitress actually sees you, because that could be a problem as well. So, but what the Denny's and the IHOPs are doing is that they just make you stand there. And they'll say, even though they have lots of seating, I was in a Denny's a day or two ago. I was in this Denny's, and they had plenty of seating. So there, and they had actually, there were about there was a waiter and a waitress, and then there had to be a cook. I never did necessarily see the cook, and I did. It could have been the cook that came out, and at one point there was this woman that came out and was kind of bussing tables a little bit. So, but they were just, even though it wasn't that busy, and they had customers in there, but, you know, not that many. And she said, well, you know, she'd just make you stand there and say, well, I'm sorry, we are behind, and it may be, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes before we get to you. And so in the meantime, I've been in plenty of restaurants where there, let's say there are three people running the place, sometimes only two. And they, you know, it depends on how busy they get, of course, but especially if there's two people that are waiting tables, and let's say maybe one cooking, or two, sometimes they'll have two people cooking, depending. But usually if a waiter or waitress is pretty efficient, they can take care of business with a minimal amount of motion. Because, you know, people over time, once you do a job for very long, you tend to become very efficient at it. And you don't, you know, you kind of end up not wasting motion, because someone, especially someone learning a job, or they're not familiar with a particular job, they don't they'll end up wasting a lot of motion. And so these, this gal and this guy in this Denny's were kind of running around like chickens with their head cut off and wasting a lot of motion. And so about a third of the customers that were standing there, about a third of the people, and this was just my rough estimate, about a third of them were just walking. They'd stand there for a little bit. They'd get frustrated, and they'd just decide, we'll go somewhere else, or, you know, not worth waiting for. So about a third of their business was just kind of walking off because they didn't want to stand there. And I can understand that, but of course I was more or less a captive audience, so I just had to stand there, and I waited, and finally I was seated, and finally got the food, and, you know, was out of there. So, but there's, it's not just the labor shortage, you know, and all these people that are talking about it, they're blaming this ridiculous unemployment. Government's paying people to sit at home and watch Netflix. Well, that has, in a lot of cases, that has actually ended. That's not a thing. I was in Kentucky the other day, and it was at a Denny's, and they had a shortage of help. And so, but she said, well, Kentucky ended the unemployment payments, ended them like 5 months ago. I think it was Kentucky. It might have been a different state, but I believe it was Kentucky. And they still had a labor shortage. So here's what I think's going that happened. And this, you know, this didn't just kind of happen. It's not, you know, what ended up happening. You've had a bunch of baby boomers, people that are my age. You know, I'm 66, so I'm a baby boomer. And, you know, I've never really liked that term, but that's, you know, that's what everyone recognizes, and so that's what it's called. And so I like to make fun of it and called it a, you know, baby doomer with a D. But in any case, you have these baby boomers. And the virus, you know, came along, and you had the lockdowns, and people were afraid of the virus, and, you know, and they scared the heck out of people, the media did, as much as possible, create a crisis. oh my God, we're all going to die. And so a lot of these people, they just thought, well, I'm retirement age anyway. I'm just going to retire. I'm going to quit. And that happened not only in the restaurant business. It happened all over the place. I have, I go to two different dentists to get my teeth cleaned every 3 months. I go to one dentist and then I alternate to this other one. And so one of the hygienists at the one dentist that I go to, they locked down and they actually closed the practice, or mostly quit taking appointments there for a little bit, except for emergencies. And so the one hygienist, she just decided, I'm retirement age anyway, I'm just going to go ahead and quit. And so she did. And then, so they replaced her with, someone else, a younger one. So there's just one instance, but that's happened, and then plus you've had millions of baby boomers, because it's, think of a snake going through a garden, or, like a food going through a snake, rather, or something, like something bolt making a garden hose bulge as it goes through. That's one way of thinking about the baby boom generation, because all these people just, it was like a big bulge moving through the system. And so now it's at the end of the cycle, and a lot of people are retiring. Millions of people are retiring every month. So that's one of the problems. And COVID, I think, acted as a catalyst to sort of force the thing, kind of force things. Because before that, we were all asleep, and everything seemed to be working. Everything was working fine, no problems. And then all of a sudden, lockdown, people freaking out, I'm going to retire. They retired, and then now the things are trying to open back up, and there's a labor shortage. You can blame some of it on the unemployment, the ridiculous unemployment, but that's kind of dried up now, and it may be going on in some states, but in other places it's long since dried up. Maybe you could say that some of the younger people are, their parents are supporting them, somebody's supporting them or whatever. But I think what's happened, and then the ones that are actually working, like in these Denny's, typically, Denny's and IHOP in particular, they are, they're kind of younger workers, and they're sort of learning. And so they're going through all of these people that maybe some of them don't ever show up after they hire them, or they'll show up for a day or a week or something, and then they decide, this isn't for me, this is just too much work, I can't do this, can't take it. But the ones that do stick, as well as the ones that may not last long, they're pretty incompetent. They're not very, so they're, like I was saying, they're running around, wasting a lot of energy. It's kind of like I can pick out typically a truck driver that's brand new, that, they're trying to, let's just say they're going to hook the truck to the trailer. And they'll just go through all kinds of, they're just working their tail off, and they're sweating, and going through all kinds of gyrations and running around, and maybe they eventually get it hooked up, or whatever it is they're doing, but they're working like mad, and they're not getting much done. Whereas someone that knows what they're doing is just, you just do it, and it's done just in a really brief period of time with minimal effort. And so that's true generally of all types of work. Any kind of work you can name, you're going to have the people that are learning it, typically after they've done it for some period of time, they will get to the point where they just know how to do it. Your brain sort of automates a lot of it, and you just know how to do it. So there's that. But there's still a problem. There is a labor shortage. It is a bona fide labor shortage. It's not all it not it, it, it at this point can't be blamed on the unemployment insurance. And you can't blame all of it on parents supporting their kids. You know, they're 30, living in the basement. There is some of that, but still, you can't blame all of that. And then a lot of those guys, those people, guys, men or women, or, you know, the boys or girls that are 30 years old, 35 years old, a lot of those are living in the parents' basement, and mommy and daddy do support them, but they also have a job of some sort. But they just don't want to leave. Don't want to leave the nest. So there is some of that going on. The big problem, here's the problem. And it was, you can think of it sort of like a scab. Like you have this wound that's sort of scabbed over, and you kind of are able to ignore it. But then all of a sudden, you know, and of course it was covered up by, the whole problem was kind of covered up by, you know, I was talking about it, but it was kind of covered up by the, all of, you know, this baby boom generation that was about to retire, that was continuing to work. You know, things continued to work like clockwork up until the shutdown, and then they freaked out, and then it was, you know, of course it was time for them to all retire at the same time, kind of, and that's what's happening. And that exposed a problem. You know, it's kind of like the Band-Aid or the scab just got ripped off of the, and then all of a sudden there's this gaping wound of a genuine labor shortage. Now, where did this labor shortage come from? It's called abortion. It's been going on since when? Maybe 1973, Roe versus Wade made abortion legal. I think, now of course, I think the, if you count up until, you know, because there's an accurate count, there's a website that you can look at, and it, you know, it gives you like a moment by moment count, and I don't know what the U.S. is up to, you know, probably 50, 60 million abortions by now, because they're continuously counting all of them. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, 40 million would be working age now. But they were aborted. 40 million people. 40 million. Imagine a city of 40 million. We don't even have a city in the United States with 40 million. 40 million people were aborted. Well, why? They would have had a bad life. Or inconvenient. They're just an inconvenient byproduct of sex. Unviable tissue mass. People didn't want to have to be burdened by raising a child. I want more for my life than having a child at this young age. Don't want to be burdened. Forty million people. So imagine the goods and services that would have been produced by 40 million people coming in, you know, just imagine that. That was just wiped out by abortion. So it is a genuine labor shortage. America aborted its labor pool, but it was hidden because of the baby boom generation continuing to work. And it was largely the baby boomers that, of course, did the aborting. So, you know, I hope, you know, the golden age is over now, as far as things working the way they have. You know, you think, well, we can just have everything at our whim. You know, you had stores like Walmart that were open 24/7. Many restaurants that were open 24/7. That's all gone now. Very few, you know, Walmart does not stay open 24/7 anymore. You know, that's not good, and I don't think that's coming back. There are very few restaurants now that are open 24/7. I don't think that's coming back. A lot of restaurants are just closed at this point. And the ones that are open, a lot of them are just barely functional. And people are complaining about shortages of this and shortages of that. Well, a lot of it is, you know, it's caused by a genuine labor shortage. Things don't just automatically, magically happen. It takes people to make things and to do things, to produce goods and services. It's not magic. So, the golden age is over. So I hope, you know, hope the people that aborted their children, I hope they enjoyed the convenience that they had. Hope they enjoyed it. It's over now. You know, and probably some of those people are bitching that, you know, things aren't working the way they did. The Amazon packages don't show up the way they did. You know, good luck on the overnight stuff from Amazon, because most of it doesn't happen now. It takes longer. So, anyway, I think that's the real problem. I think that the labor pool was largely aborted. But just imagine the goods and services that would be, the economic activity, the goods and services that would have been produced by 40 million people. That's more than the population of Canada. I think Canada's only got like 30 million people, or like Australia's around 30 million, maybe, if that much. Australia may only be about 20 million. 40 million people were aborted, murdered in the womb, never to walk the earth, never to even be conscious, never to have a chance, never to produce. So, you know, but that's it. I think that, you know, expectations need to change at this point. I think that people just, you know, reality comes along, and sometimes the reality comes, you know, whatever the reality is, sometimes you just have to face the, you know, it's always the best idea to face reality and not try to bury, you know, twist it around, or, you know, try to make it into something that it's not, because it has a tendency to snap back, you know. And this is a good illustration of that. You know, you abort 40 million people for the sake of convenience. You murder them, basically, for the sake of convenience, and now it's coming back to bite, you know, as a social policy, it's coming back to bite us. And, you know, and it's a you can think of it as in a sort of a Darwinian sense. You know, because there are people that think, well, you know, the country's going to be judged for all, you know, for all the abortions or whatever. Well, you can kind of see it that way. But you can also see it in a you know, kind of take the judgment part out of it, you can see it in a, you know, if you abort your future labor pool, then you end up with a bunch of old people that you know, don't have anybody to take care of them. You end up with a bunch of old people that once they can't produce goods and services anymore, they're just sort of screwed. You know? So, and they did it to themselves. So, anyway, I think that's kind of what's going on with these ongoing labor shortages, and they are real shortages. It's not, this isn't just caused by the, it was kind of caught, you could say it's caused by the government, kind of, but because of, you know, people encouraging, using the government, encouraging the abortion thing to happen, kind of trying to make it, normalize it and make it normal. You can, but it's not really the unemployment. That's not it. That's not it. You know, 40 million people were aborted. 40 million people are not in the labor pool, because they never had a chance to exist. So, anyway, so that was one of the things I wanted to talk about. The other one, or one of the other ones, was I was thinking about, you know, kids, when the kids come into the world, they have an expectation of their parents. And I really think that the kids tend to look at their parents, and I've talked about this a lot, but it's so worth repeating. Kids tend to look at their parents as if they're gods. And so the kids have an expectation. They look at their parents and they think, you know, and they can't articulate it, of course, but what they really, you know, but I can articulate what they think, what I believe they think. They look at the parents and they think that they're expecting that parent to be a model for them to emulate, to be the best that they can be, to emulate. So they're expecting that parent to be honorable. They're expecting that parent to be just. They're expecting that parent to teach them to exist correctly in a society. Because we do, you know, we do live in a society. We do, as I've said before, we do need each other. You know, there are very few of us that could exist very long, you know, in a, like some wilderness, Alaskan wilderness somewhere, where you're, you know, you're chopping wood and, you know, for doing all the things, and then you know, making, you know, killing your own food and cooking it and all that stuff. That's not, be honest, that's not reality, and that's not a very meaningful existence. You need other people. I was thinking about this evening as I was eating supper here. You really need other people. And, you know, whenever the waitress, you know, I gave her my card, and she rang it up, and then she brought it back, and then so I, you know, I put the tip on there and signed it. And but in the meantime, she thanked me for you know, coming in, and then I turned right around and I said, "Thank you for being here." And I meant it. Because in order, you know, in order for me to have meaning, I need to work. Me, you know, in particular, I need to have something, some reason to exist. That, you know, so therefore I'm able to do something that I can do reasonably well, that benefits other people, And that gives me a reason to exist. That's meaningful to me. But in order to do that, it requires the presence, the functional presence, let's say, of other people. Like this waitress, for example. This waitress, she's there. She's working. She's, she didn't just skip off somewhere and, sit in the gutter and smoke dope. You know, she was there working. So I appreciate the fact that she was there. So that's why I thanked her for being there. But then I realized, yeah, in order for me to have meaning, I need to be able to do the work. But in order to do work, it requires other people. It requires the presence and the cooperation and the work of other people. And then the benefit of that is that we all have it then that are participating in that, we all have a chance at meaning. So in any case, children expect their parents to, I think, ultimately show them, teach them, demonstrate to them, how to have meaning. Some meaning, how to have meaning, to bring meaning to this existence. Because, we're born, we go through this learning phase. We realize pretty quickly that we die when we, in the grand scheme of things, we're not here that long. And so, what's the point? It's pretty dismal. You're here for, let's say, 80 years, 70, 80, 90 years, and then you die, and then what was the point? Was there any meaning to it? What did it mean that you were here? What did it mean that you watched Netflix? What did it mean? Did it mean anything? Or what did it mean that you got the new car, or you had the new house, or whatever? What does that mean? Or even if you have, you have kids now, what does that mean? How did you interact with other people? Then you're starting to get into some meaning. How did you functionally interact with other people? Then you're starting to get into some meaning, potentially. So kids come into the world, they expect their parents to demonstrate to them, to teach them, to lead them towards being the best human being that they can be. And that's what the kids expect. Now, of course, the kids all, human beings aren't perfect and parents aren't perfect. They're very few perfect parents. And, that's probably, it's a thing that doesn't exist. There's varying degrees of it. Some parents are obviously better than others. But nonetheless, the kids have expectations. And, of course, they end up sorely disappointed usually. So, and then you have the thing with maybe you have some perfect parents, parents that were really good, and then you just have rotten kids. That happens too. But I think the function of a parent, parents should encourage their kids. And this is the point that I want to make. Parents should encourage their kids to be as good of a human being as they possibly can be. And so kind of nested within that idea of being good would be, teach them to be good workers. You know, and that could be, that could mean be a good employee. It could mean being a, you know, if they own their own business, just a good business owner. But somebody that is working, you know, that is working hard to, you know, with whatever talents that they bring to the table, working to what's the phrase I'm looking for? Kind of bring that to the table to benefit other people ultimately. And and generally speaking, like I've said before, the fact that you know that you're benefiting other people is you get paid for it. It's worthwhile. You end up getting paid for it. People trade for it. People actually are trading for your expertise. So that's how you know that you're doing something that's worthwhile. Kind of in a more of a concrete way. So that's one element of it. Teach them how to. But then the other part that's nested within that, you know, being kind of the best person you can be, would be as ethical as you can be. You know, teach the child to be ethical and to be honest and to be to treat people properly and not try to cheat. You know, don't steal, don't cheat, don't lie, etc., etc. And why would they teach them that? Well, here's the deal. If you want to be, and this applies to children, but it applies to adults as well. If you're a miserable person, let's say, you know, how do you not be miserable? You're probably doing something wrong. You're probably not living up to your potential. You're not the person that you could be. And that's probably what a good chunk of what's making you miserable. You're not the person that you could be. So what you want to do then is, you know, have the idea, have the attitude, I want to be the best person that I can possibly be. And that means I'm going to do, you know, even if I'm a janitor sweeping or a street cleaner, you know, kind of cleaning the gutter, have the attitude, I'm going to be the best janitor, I'm going to be the best street sweeper, street cleaner. I'm going to be the best whatever that I can possibly be. You know, instead of grumbling about the job, be grateful for it, that you have a job and that you're aware. Be grateful that you have an awareness, that you exist. You know, I've talked about this before. You realize how improbable it is that you exist. It's amazing. It means that every one of your ancestors, going back God knows how many years, every one of your ancestors had to reproduce successfully to produce you. Now, what are the odds of that? What, you know, think about that. What are the odds of that? Not only produce you, but, you know, produce an intelligent, functional person. What are the odds of that? Every single ancestor had to reproduce successfully. That's amazing. And it would seem that the odds against that would be astronomical. So, you want to not be miserable. You know, people say, oh, I want to be happy or whatever. Well, what, you know, I don't know what that is. But I, you know, one of the ways I can define, you know, for myself, happiness is not being miserable. And that's not being miserable is something. Not being miserable really is something, because there's a lot of miserable people in the world. You have no idea what goes through people's heads. You know, you can kind of look at them and you have no idea what's going on, you know, in their minds. And I think a lot of them are pretty unhappy. So that's, you know, you want a formula for being, you know, a quote-unquote happier person, or at least not be miserable. You need to be the best person you can. You need to have some kind of meaning. That usually means a job, but it could mean... Excuse me, there are other things that could mean, but generally I think you have to have some sort of a job. You have to be doing something that you're good at, that you're sort of trading with other people. It's kind of a win-win type situation with other people. And those win-win type situations where you're doing something that you're good at, and then you're trading with someone else that's good at something else, and you sort of trade, you're making a trade, and that's a win-win for both sides. That generally, I think, is going to, you know, has the potential to bring some real meaning to both sides. And then you want to develop your ethics as much as you possibly can. Be the best person that you can possibly be. Be the best worker that you can possibly be. You know, and if you have kids, you know, be the best husband, father, mother, wife, etc. You know, and so, and then beyond that, let's see, what else did I do? Beyond that, the other thing, you know, it's, and that, you, and what I just talked about, that will help, but that's still not quite enough. You also need to lose the resentment. You know, and you, if you've listened to me for any length of time, you've heard me talk about resentment, and I believe that everybody has had it. You know, most people have it, and they're not aware that they even carrying it around, but they are, because the resentment comes packaged with its own denial mechanism. I believe that kids come into the world, they have these expectations of their parents. The parents fail to teach them to be, how to be meaningful, you know, how to have, you know, being a, how to be a meaningful human being, or have a human being that has meaning, that's able to find meaning, generate meaning. And they resent the parents. Sometimes the parents can be deliberate, you know, just hapless, clueless, which I think a lot of them are. But on the other hand, sometimes parents can be deliberately mean. That happens too. So the kids resent the parents, and then they get sent off to school, and then, you know, and it just turns into a snowball. It kind of like, it gets, it's rolling down the hill and gets bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, and it started out with that one little thing. What is resentment? Resentment is us playing God in our own mind as human beings. We play God in our own minds. And I believe the way we do that, you know, is you can think of resentment as kind of a puffing up. You can think of it as a, you know, as if you're God and you're in your awareness, and you're hurling the mental thunderbolts at people, places, and things as if you could strike them dead. How dare they offend God? You think of resentment as a defense, when in fact it's the opposite of defense. You resent something, you become what you hate. Whatever you know, if you're resentful, you absorb the environment around you. It's not a defense. It's exactly the opposite. Resentment comes packaged with its own denial mechanism. So then you can say, oh, I don't hate my parents. You know, some people say, well, I didn't have a dad. Well, how could I hate my dad if I didn't have... Well, you're hating the placeholder. You know, and that's tantamount, you know, hating your parents and particularly hating your dad is tantamount to hating God. It's kind of like shaking your fist at God. How dare you? Why did you create me? I'm miserable. And then, of course, the more resentful you are, the other part of that resentment separates you from who you could have been. It separates you from what you end up thinking of as a guilty conscience. If you can actually drop the resentment, let go of the resentment, starting out by being aware that you have it and actively looking for it, if you can actually let go of the resentment, if you can actually do that, then you make friends with your conscience. And it's kind of a miraculous thing to be friends with your conscience, because then the conscience you can think of it as a natural thing. It's a natural part of us, but we end up separating from it via resentment. But otherwise, it's just a natural part of us. If you can get rid of the resentment and kind of join back with your conscience, then that conscience is sort of a natural part of your awareness. Then you can kind of exist in the world and interact with the world, interact with all these other people, but not be not end up absorbing the toxicity. And you kind of know what to do, because your conscience actually becomes a kind of a natural part of, and I've never really thought of it this way until now, but it kind of becomes a natural part of your awareness. And then, of course, the other part of that is that, and I've talked about this before, and words sort of fall apart, and even if I come up with words, it's just words. But it happened a few years ago. All of a sudden one day I woke up and I realized my anxiety was gone. Where did the anxiety go? I carry this peace around with me. You know, people have this fantasy, well, I want to get away. I want to, go to some island somewhere and just shut the world out. Or go to some cabin and shut the world out, thinking that that's going to bring them peace. And it's probably not. It's more of a fantasy. It's kind of like the retirement fantasy that you're not going to be a slave anymore. I carry this peace. I have this peace of mind. It's one label that I can put on it. I have this peace of mind that really defies understanding, because I'm in constant situations, driving the truck, in heavy traffic, that a lot of people think that's super stressful. I don't find it really stressful at all. Sometimes I get tired, but You know, that happens anyway, but, you know, I'm not really stressed by it. You know, and I certainly don't get upset by the traffic. But I have this peace of mind that I just, it doesn't matter where I'm at. I bring it with me. I don't need to get away. There's nothing to get away from. What, you know, what are you trying to get away from? What are you trying to, you know, when people say they want to get away, what do they mean? You know, what are they trying to escape from? They're trying to escape from some form of hell, I believe. Some form of hell that they've invited in because of resentment. So, but in any case, I have this peace of mind that I, you know, it doesn't make any sense because the world is just as crazy as it's ever been. It's getting crazy. It's going to get worse, by the way. It's going to get worse, but, you know, because of all of the, this, you know, the mass hysteria is the biggest danger that we face. And I've said that now ever since the pandemic virus COVID thing started. Mass hysteria is the greatest danger that we face. And as long as there's enough people that can be made hysterical, that kind of cotton on to the mass hysteria, it's just going to get worse. And it's actually kind of dangerous, certainly. It can be actually kind of dangerous, but at the same time, I'm perfectly peaceful. I'm absolutely at peace. And I am confident that I'll know what to do whenever any situation comes up. I know what to do. You know, whatever the situation that comes up, I just kind of know what to do. And so I have faith that I'll know what to do. You know, and when it comes to this jab thing, I'm not going to do it. I don't see the point of it. And I'm not going to bend the knees of my mind to kowtow to it. Not at all. And if it means... I don't think it's going to come to that, but if it means me quitting my job, bye-bye job. Find something else to do. I don't think that's going to happen, but you have these people, these dictatorial-type people that are pushing the idea, and it's, you know, it's really worthless. You know, and it's not really about the jab. The jab, the whole thing, the idea, well, we're going to force everybody to do it. And of course, their justification is that, well, it's going to stop the progress of the disease. No, it's not. The disease is never going to go away. It's, you know, it's another virus. It's another cold virus, basically. Maybe it's a little more virulent, but it's another coronavirus. It's never going to go away. So you're going to have a Darwinian thing. And the other thing I was thinking about today, it's interesting, this COVID virus, at least the first version of it, sort of, it's almost like it targeted the obese people. You know, it targeted, in particular, it targets people that have poor metabolism as a result of eating all the carbohydrates. You know, and in a Darwinian sense, you can think that, you can think, well, the virus is just taking advantage of, it found a little niche. This virus has found a niche to settle into, you know, to prey on, to be a parasite on. And it would be the people that, are eating all the carbohydrates and then end up with all of the various pathologies, comorbidities that develop as a result of eating all the carbohydrates. So, and it will be it is Darwinian, it is survival of the fittest, and so the idea, oh well, we're going to have a vaccine and it's going to somehow magically, this magic potion vaccine, we just stick it in there and it's going to make everything fine and we can go back to normal. Well, it's never going to be normal. You're never going to go back to normal. The virus itself is endemic, meaning that it's just a new way to maybe die, or it's a new way to catch cold, depending on your, it just kind of depends. Without rehashing all that, it just sort of depends. But this virus is kind of found its own little niche. People are kind of abiding by it. They continue to, slug away at their carbohydrates. It's really kind of crazy. So, but I'm perfectly content not bending the knees of my mind. I can kind of think of myself as kind of sitting at the center, and I'm kind of watching this hurricane spin around me, and these people are going they're going crazy and with the mass hysteria, and I'm kind of sitting in my little, in the center of the hurricane, just sort of watching them go crazy. So, by the way, I did, if you go to truckertompodcast.com, up at the top, I did fix that, so you're going to see a link there that says, what does that say? It says something, and then it says, but it does say meditation, and I did include the meditation files, so you can listen to it right there on your computer or your phone or whatever, download it, burn it to a CD, put it on a thumb drive, whatever it is you want to do, however it is you want to consume it. And it's a very simple meditation technique. It teach you how to meditate, and I can't promise it'll help everybody, but it will help most people. I'm convinced of that. But you've got to stick with it. You can't just, not just a one and done type thing. You've got to stick with it. And if you find that it helps you, then you should stick with it. Don't just, well, it's, and I know the temptation is it's easy to just never get around to it. You can always find other little excuses to do this and that and the other, and not do something that's meaningful. But the whole idea of it is to allow, stop running away. Practice this meditation basically teaches you how to separate, that you are a point of awareness. We as human beings, we have this point of awareness, and the meditation technique basically teaches you that, or it shows you, if you practice it properly, it shows you, demonstrates to you that you can actually bring your point of awareness out of your thoughts. So, it'll demonstrate to you, you are not your thoughts. People think, oh, I'm my thoughts. No, you're not your thoughts. Wherever your thoughts are coming from, they're somewhere in your head, or however that happens, that's not you. And you can actually demonstrate to yourself that you're not your thoughts. You can actually separate you know, bring your point of awareness kind of out of your thoughts, and then you can realize, hey, I'm not my thoughts. You know, and you can kind of come into the present moment. Not in the past, not in the future, not in the same thoughts that just keep going around and around like a rat running in a squirrel cage or a mouse running in a squirrel cage. And that's typically, you know, people just go around and around and around with the same thoughts, the same morbid thoughts. So that, I did get that fixed, so that's, because I had a problem whenever I moved server, and it you know, some of the everything didn't come along, just some of the things came along, so, but that portion of it's fixed, so that should be available now, and I, you know, if you do anything at all, I would give that a try. You know, really give that a serious try, because it really, you know, it has helped me, you know, immensely. No question about it. And of course, the other thing that's really helped me immensely is doing this podcast. You know, I've been doing this since, oh gosh, probably October of 2004. And it has helped immensely. You know, I've been, you know, maybe some other people have benefited from me doing a podcast. Hopefully they have. But I can say for sure that I've been probably, as you know, the biggest beneficiary that I know of has been me. Because, you know, by, you know, there's really a couple of ways that we can think. You know, you can either think out loud, you know, kind of think out loud by talking, or the other way is writing, you know, which I do some writing. But, you know, obviously with this podcast, I do a lot of talking. And so I've, that's one way of thinking. You know, if you can talk out loud or talk, you know, kind of talk, verbalize things in one way or the other, you know, either in written form or by speaking, you can actually, that's really how you can think, because it's you know, it's not so easy to just sit, you know, sit there silently and try to think. So, but so I've been the beneficiary of doing the podcast, because it's, you know, it's kind of long been known that if you have someone that just sort of talks things through, and, you know, it helps if you have listeners, but if you can just kind of sit and talk things out, you know, it really does sort of stabilize the mind. You know, Freud noticed that. And I think, you know, the people in the Catholic Church, I think, noticed that as well. You know, you have the idea of confession, although I think they've also corrupted it somewhat. But there is something useful about having, you know, carrying on, you know, meaningful conversations. Talk about meaningful things in an honest way. There's something really useful about that. So, anyway, I probably better be cutting this off. It would be 12:49 Eastern time. So, but I didn't get out of, I got to Mabane, North Carolina this morning. It was about Eastern time. It would have been about 5:30 a.m. And so I took my break there, and I woke up, I don't know, it was about 12:30, and so I went into the IHOP, and I, you know, eventually got something to eat because it was kind of slow, but I got the food and then ate. Then I came back out to the truck and waited about another hour and a half, and finally it was about I don't know, two something, or it was three something. It was pushing 4 o'clock. Let's say a quarter till four. Whenever I got out, I think that was right. Got out of there. It might have been more like, yeah, that was probably about 3:45, something like that. Got out of there, started driving, and then I stopped here because I, you know, kind of ran out of time, or I would have ran out of time, so I stopped here at Carnesville, Georgia. I had, I don't know, maybe like an hour and 45 minutes remaining on the 70. Not quite enough to get to the destination, so, you know, take the break here and then get to the destination, and then hopefully be able to do a drop and hook there, and then that's it. The destination's in McDonough, Georgia. Then I go to this other place in McDonough, Georgia, different business, and I do another drop and hook. Hopefully that load will be ready, and then that load delivers. So today was the 14th. So that load will deliver anytime on the 16th at Searcy, Arkansas. So, and then I may end up getting home on the 16th. So I'll be like a day late. If everything goes right, I'll be about, you know, probably like a day late, because I should have gotten home on the 15th. But so it looks like I'll be getting home on the 16th anyway. So So instead of going back to work on January the 4th, I'll just push it out to January the 5th, you know, because I do begin my vacation. So in any case, hope everyone is having a great week. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.
Does your life suck? Is it a living hell to be you? Do you ever wish you could just end it all? Or do you have that pesky aging parent, nagging wife, or insolent brat of a kid you wish you could just eliminate? If so, know that you are not alone. Planned Parenthood proudly announces a new business unit, Planned Parenthood Death Centers. At Planned Parenthood Death Centers, we can help you overcome life's mistakes. At Planned Parenthood Death Centers, we believe that every life should be a planned and wanted life. Planned Parenthood Death Centers, coming soon to a location near you.
All services must be prepaid in advance, cash only.